Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, for episode number 111. Happy New Year, everybody. I am so excited to be... I was going to say back at work, but I feel like I'm just like getting on the on-ramp to the back-to-work freeway.
We talk about food.
Oh my God, I thought that was going to be like a food freeway song.
I wish I was responsible for that comedic timing. That's what happens when you leave the iPod on.
Maybe that should be one of our New Year's resolutions, Jack. We should put in some comedic sound drops.
I'm down. I mean, I can do it.
Or we could just randomly hit play on the iPad at any given moment and then like improv. Although we saw how good I am at improv a couple of episodes
ago. That's true, we did see that.
It did not go well. Welcome back, Jack. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. How was your New Year's?
It was fine. You know, this is the week of everybody asking you, right?
Right, like, yeah.
How was the New Year? How was your holiday? But it was fine.
I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to have the holidays behind us.
Right.
If my kiddo, whom I love and adore, did not have enough school this week or this past week. And so he was home a lot. And I'll tell you, three-year-olds have so much energy. And when you're trying to do other things, like take down the Christmas tree, he was not having any of it. So yesterday he went back to school and I took it down and I was like, all right, I'm going to have to come up with a story because we cut the branches off and use it to mulch the blueberries. So we kind of prepared him for that. And he was like, no, we're putting it in the basement. And I was like, no, I'm putting it outside and then we're going to chop it up and we're going to mulch the blueberries. And he was like, mommy, it's going in the basement. So yesterday I took it down while he was at school and I was like fully prepared to have like a whole issue. He didn't even notice it was gone. Didn't even notice. So maybe in a month he'll notice. He'll be like, hey, wait, wasn't there a tree in the corner? So I'm super excited to be looking forward into 2016. I had a great horoscope for 2016. So I'm very excited. So joining me in the studio, I have a whole bunch of friends. Jack is in the booth. Allison, deputy director, is sitting across from me. Hey, Allison.
Hi, Emily.
Regular Sharp and Hot guest contributor and very, very, very wonderful human being.
And host of a wonderful New Year's Day brunch, all-day brunch.
All-day brunch.
It was great.
I heard amazing things about.
It wasn't quite Titanic style, but, you know, back to our last show.
Right. Oh, that's right, our party show.
I thought about you guys a lot, actually.
I completely forgot we had to do the Titanic party. And it's like iceberg season, too, so we're getting close.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to do the pool with the icebergs?
I don't know. We'll think about that.
We have to figure this out.
New Year.
And to help us... I talk about him all of the time. He's never been on the show before. He's been quietly standing in a corner in the past, but I'd like to introduce the listening audience to my husband, Mark Peterson.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. How's it going?
So, Mark, I brought you on today for two reasons. One was I didn't have another guest booked yet, and two, because you are in the gardening world after... taking the leap from working in the kitchen. So when people say, oh, what does your husband do? I say, well, he used to work in the kitchen. He's a trained chef, and now he's a gardener. People say, wait, your husband's a chef, too? You guys must eat so well. So address the rumors, Mark. What is it like to live with two chefs in a house?
We do eat very well.
See, and I tell people we eat a lot of grilled cheese, but it's really
that's
good grilled
cheese. That's
true,
and pasta and sauce.
So you were not always in the kitchen, though, but when you were a younger person, you decided to go through the new school's culinary program. What drew you into the culinary world?
I wanted to move to New York, and I thought, if I get a culinary program degree of any type, I can get a job in a kitchen anywhere I go. If I leave the city, I can get a job any place. Like, I really looked at it in a very utilitarian kind of way. Like, what can I do quickly so I can make some money? And if I decide to move someplace else, I'll also be able to get a job pretty much any place I go. And I thought, I could work in a kitchen. That'll work. So I went to the New School program. It's a real, like, down and dirty program, real fast, none of this detailed month-long studies.
Thing, yeah,
papers.
Wait,
it was, I think it was 10 weeks or 12 weeks, and you listened to the, there was only one instructor, and she lectured for 2 hours in the morning, and then everybody cooked, and it was done by one in the afternoon, and you came back and did it all the next day, and started out with stocks, then soups, then everything had a progression, so they didn't have to store too much food. So basically, like, anything you prepped, learning a basic skill, you would use the next day to make the next dishes. And it was a great program, and there was people, there was somebody there who wanted to open, move back to Argentina and open a food cart, and there was somebody like myself who just was, like, young and wanted to learn how to cook, and there was somebody who was a retiree that thought they were going to open a cafe and a wine bar, and so there was, like, a whole ragtag mixed bag of people who were not either time-wise or financially committed enough to, like, pursue a full-on culinary degree.
And that, I feel like that program for sure doesn't exist anymore.
Does not exist anymore.
But it seems like there would be space for that. Like, between having no culinary education whatsoever and just going to work in a restaurant, and the opposite of, you know, and the opposite being, like, full-on culinary school, size of a small BMW student loan that I'll pay off for the rest of my life. It seems like there's room in the marketplace for a nice medium.
And they were very focused on, like, when you get done, you will have a job. It won't necessarily be a fancy job, but, like, we will, if you want to work, like, you'll be able to get a job because we're going to teach you enough skills that you'll be able to walk in and do at least the minimum of what needs to get done in any restaurant.
So I want to, while we're talking about the culinary things, we have Allison until the break, and I want to ask Jack and Allison and you, Mark, also about, like, it, I don't like the word resolution this year. In the past, I've used the word resolution, like, Jolie Care, who hosts Ask a Clean Person, we made some serious clean person resolutions, which I gotta say, we changed the sheets a lot more this year, so I feel like I did that well. But I want to, I feel like culinary aspirations or, like, a checklist is more, I don't know, apropos of how I want to approach this year. Resolution is starting to feel a little, like, punishy. So, Allison, what do you have on your list?
Well, I have one that I think I can do. and then I have an aspiration, which I think is my new term instead of resolution. Mm-hmm. It's like, I have an aspiration, I will.
It's a direction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So my really concrete one is to eat more protein. I think we've talked about this in the past. As a vegetarian, I feel like I've also taken up, like, a new exercise regime, which mm-hmm. I've had for the last year, but I'm doing a 30-day challenge, which I feel really good about.
So wait, what's involved in the 30-day challenge?
Okay, so it is my studio does spinning, like a CrossFit, like cross-training situation, and yoga. It is very Williamsburg. I am clearly their target demographic. But if you go to 30 classes in 30 days, it doesn't matter which classes, it doesn't matter how many a day you do. But if you do 30 in 30 days, then you get a week free.
And that's good incentive.
I am going with them to Colombia in March on a retreat. And I have to prove to myself that I can, like, really seriously commit to this. So part of that resolution for me is to try to eat more protein, because I am notoriously bad at that. But I also like accidentally did it over the holidays, and I felt really good, like, in a weird way.
Like, oh. What was the protein that you were consuming over the holidays?
I was eating a lot of eggs. I had a big brunch party. I was, you know, I was, like, at my parents. I was at home, so there was, like, a little more slower, gentler way of cooking. So, but one of the things I sort of was thinking about, I had an amazing dinner at Cocina Latina, which is Shauna Pacifico's new place in Greenpoint. And if you are in New York and you haven't been, you have to go. But I was there on New Year's, and I had this, she made these oyster and something, like, fried pastry. It was insane. I'm, like, embarrassed trying to tell you how good they were, because I feel like it's, like, kind of, like, not safe for the radio.
She's a genius.
She's,
Jack, will you put in the write-up Shauna Pacifico? We talk about that she is a genius.
Please,
yes.
That's a quote for this episode.
SEO, Shauna Pacifico, so, genius.
Genius.
Yeah.
I agree.
This morning we went to Jackson Heights to eat momo, which I've never had before, but Tibetan dumplings. Mm-hmm. I gorged myself. But Mark and I had some time to kill because we thought they opened at 11:30. They didn't open till noon. So we found a Asian supermarket around the corner. We're walking around, and I saw in the the freezer section, frozen packs of frozen chicken hearts. One of the best things I have ever eaten in my entire life were Shauna Pacifico's fried chicken hearts when she had Pacifico's Fine Food. And I'm like obsessed with her, and I will eat and follow her, and whatever she does, I trust her. She's great.
She's a genius.
So oyster pastry,
anyway.
Sexual references we can't say, family yeah. show.
Okay. you guys can't see I'm fanning myself. It's 10 degrees outside, but I'm warm. But yeah, no, I kind of broke my general vegetarianism rule with her and had some, I had those. I had some things with some trout roe, kind of like dabbled in the seafood space. And I'm sort of thinking, I'm softening around the idea. Our executive director and my office mate and dear friend, Aaron Fairbanks, kind of came to me this morning and she was like, you know, I get why you might be like kind of nervous around flesh meat, but maybe you should try broth. Like broth would be a nice way to more protein in your diet without actually having to eat meat. So I'm also really considering that. You know, it's like kind of a new year. I'm trying to decide how to do things for me that are like not just like on the principle, but better tailored to my needs and how I want to live my life. And I think a really like strict edict that I've held myself to is this vegetarian like bright line. But it's 2016, it's new year, it's new me. Maybe it's time to change. So.
You know, my vegetarian girlfriend, she'll do the broth.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, she won't order it, you know? But if, like, there's matzo ball soup at a dinner at her dad's house and it's made with chicken stock, like, she's going to have it.
Okay.
So, that's where Allison, I think there are others like you out there.
I want you guys to not touch flesh.
Like, you know, not one bite. But the broth thing, yeah.
All right, Jack, how about you? Do you have culinary aspirations for 2016?
Well, they started with financial aspirations because I did some budgeting and some assessment of my year, and the restaurants and dining out part of my budget was just more than a bit egregious, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, what, are you using an app or did you just do it like old
I am.
School?
No, I'm using Mint.
I love Mint.
Yeah, it's good. There's a few glitches.
It's
not perfect. And I downloaded it years ago and gave up, but I tried it again and it's great. And it gave me a pretty good snapshot. And when you see that spending chart and you see the chunk that food and dining takes up, you're like, wait a minute, this is something I can actually fix.
Can I confess something that's even darker?
Yeah.
Sometimes my alcohol in bars is more than my food and dining.
Ooh, see, I lumped them all in the same place. I can't even handle that. I can't handle that.
Yeah,
I can't handle
the truth. If you drill down, that app will tell you which of that was spent bars.
The real problem is coffee.
Yeah.
That's just like insane when you think about $7 a day maybe on coffee and a pastry.
Yeah, that's
it. That's crazy. It adds up. It's like being a pack-a-day smoker almost, you know?
I will say that I was also turned on to Fresh Direct.
Okay.
They only recently started delivering out in my hood. I was out to lunch again with dear friend Jolie, and she asked me how often I go to the grocery store, and I told her like, I don't know, 4 times a week. And she was like, well, how long does it take you each time? And I was like, I don't know, like an hour. And she, again, I made her clutch her pearl. She's like, that's 4 hours a week. If you were making $100 an hour, that's $400 a week that you're spending on the grocery, like at the grocery store. So I started doing Fresh Direct in 1 month without trying. I saved $500.
Wow.
Just by like not, and that's on like actual dollars spent in the store, not the $400 that I should have been making because I'm like writing or, you know, whatever.
So you're an advocate for that. See, I used Quincible for, I guess, a full year and a half. And I think I've talked about that on the show before.
Yeah, yeah.
But we just canceled it because it's $40 and it gets you like one dinner, maybe.
See,
with some
Fresh
leftovers.
Direct, but Fresh Direct is not a meal service, not meal
no,
components.
No, I know, yeah. I'm like, we should build our own meals instead of, you know.
I will, yeah.
We also have something where we go to the grocery store and just, it's bacchanalia, and we spend, like, if we see cheese and we want cheese, we get cheese. If we see cured meats, if we see, like, vegetables, fruits that we don't need, we get it all.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many.
Like persimmons? We need persimmons.
Dude, hundreds.
We could
of
have
dollars.
Persimmons this week. It would be amazing.
It'd be like summer in January.
Or it'll be like, oh, I want to make jambalaya, like today.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll go to the grocery store and buy everything I need for jambalaya, which is like $75 if you have to buy it all, and there's no planning about it. So Fresh Direct has, like, forced me to really think about, like, I'm only ordering for delivery on Mondays, and I'm not ordering again until next Monday, what are we going to make?
And you're happy with the quality?
I got one bag of citrus. It was a mix of lemons and limes, and the limes were fine. The lemons were basically unusable. And I emailed them, and I was like, hey, I'm trying to convince my husband because Mark is not sold on this idea.
I'm not either.
And they credited my account, apologized, everything's cool, and then I got free delivery the next time.
But where are they sourcing from? Like, is there a Fresh Direct warehouse, or are they using, like, other supermarkets in your area?
There's a Fresh Direct warehouse.
Okay.
And I believe it's... I know for sure there's one in New York City, in Long Island City. And then I think there's one somewhere between Newark and Philly, because they serve all in New Jersey.
It always looked more, like, associated than Whole Foods to me. You know what I mean?
I will give you that. I will definitely give you that. But I will say you can sort everything by local, so we can buy local protein from local farms. But yeah, I mean, the lemons are, but they're not any different from the lemons I was getting at Stop and Shop either.
Right, exactly.
And so, and then the trade-off is you give yourself $100 cash budget to take to Whole Foods or whatever gourmet shop you want once a month and get
you fill it in,
get the like shopper bug out. But Mark's right. Not sold.
Wow. I might have to try this. This is interesting.
And
because
I
you do end up paying more at the like for us it's they call it the Carib market in Bed-Stuy. You know, it's like I think a Korean owned supermarket. They have good stuff, a lot of good produce and stuff, but the markups are pretty real.
Right. I would encourage you. I'll tell you what. I will send you a code because I'll get $25.
Oh, I see where this is headed. Okay.
This is one long con, Jack.
Uh-huh.
No, here's the thing. I get $25. You get $100.
Wow.
And then you get 50
Then I'll be
bucks.
Done with it. I'll use my $100 and right. See you later, Fresh Direct.
And I have to say, they're not harassing. There's no like, hey, we're doing that. I mean, like today I got an email that citrus was on sale, but maybe it's because I bitched about the citrus. I don't know. I'm a fan. I'm going to keep doing it. I like it.
Allison, how do you feel about this?
Well, so I used Fresh Direct for years ordering, actually for mostly for you, in my last job, and I really liked them a lot because if you're ordering a lot of weird things,
what are you saying about my cooking?
No, your cooking is great. I'm just saying, like, to order, you know, to order in bulk or to say I need like 15 pound packages of bacon and rainbow sprinkles and like pie crusts and marshmallows, and you know, it's just like it's easy to do it all in one place. And I found that their delivery was very responsive. There was only a couple times where I was like, where are you guys? And the nice thing is you can order late at night, which I feel like is my like prime life errand time.
Yeah, now you're talking.
While I am currently like pretty lucky to live near a Whole Foods, I would not I wouldn't shop nearly as much if I weren't. And having someone just show up at my doorstep with a box of groceries is like, and they'll deliver it late too. Like their delivery window goes until 11, I want to say,
really?
In some places. Yeah, so you can get it. They do them by increments, so you can do like a 7 to 9 a.m. or
we do ours between 5 and 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So
and they just show up, and it's there. It's like Christmas
in the morning. We get
day.
Up, open the door, and there's a pile of Fresh Direct boxes.
Do you have to receive it, or can they just leave it there?
They
for
can
you?
Leave it. It
they
depends. It. You can ask them to have you sign for it or not.
Mark, did they come on as a sponsor of Sharp and Hot?
Not yet, but I'll tell you who's getting an email. Mark, are you sold on Fresh Direct? Hearing us talk about it,
I like the milk a lot. It's local milk. It's not much.
Yeah, we get Ronnybrook milk.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. I like grocery shopping is the problem. I like grocery stores. I like picking through produce and all that. So it's hard for me to give it up. But during the season when I'm gardening, I don't have time to do that. So it's not really, I don't get a vote then because I don't have time to go to the grocery store.
Okay. So here's the other thing that I would ask. Have you ever been the person to like do the actual grocery shopping on Fresh Direct? Like when you can see your total come up on the right hand side? Like, have you ever done that?
No. I have the app, but I just use it to be like, oh, I wonder what they have.
I wonder what they have. Okay. I kind of feel like I want to send you with some homework, which is to go grocery shopping and see if seeing how much it is changes your mind about what you buy. Because that was always the thing for me where I was like, when I'm shopping in the grocery store, I'm like, oh, I see that's like $12 and that's $5 and that's whatever. But whenever I get to the checkout counter, I'm like, oh my God, what has happened?
How did we spend $200 on half a cart?
The beautiful thing about Fresh Direct is you just put things back when you're like, oh, I just hit my number. I can like make a good adult choice about what
you buy. Okay, but like I'm looking at the organic rainbow Swiss chard, right? And it looks like a plastic toy and that it's like perfectly green and the colors, like, I don't know what that bunch of chard looks like.
If you get it and it doesn't meet your expectations, you just email them and say, this is gross. And I think that they sort of flag, I would bet if I was inside their computer hive mind, I would flag the people who complain and then flag the people who don't. And then the next time two people, one who's complained and one who doesn't, orders the Swiss chard, the one who complained gets the nicer Swiss chard.
That's too complicated.
That's pretty complicated.
You think so?
I do. I think they just turn over a lot. I think that's what it is. They probably have better logistics than the grocery store where, like,
also,
not everybody wants chard.
Also, chard holds really well, too. Well,
so the other weird thing, and I don't know how to feel about this.
Thanks.
We live in New Jersey. When we order greens from Fresh Direct, we get Gotham's greens. And they're the same price as, like, I should feel good about it because they're the same price as, like, the regular clamshell of greens from anywhere you get at the grocery store. But it just feels weird to export greens to New Jersey from New York City. I don't know. That's something.
You're like, the Garden State needs more greens.
Yeah.
But, like, Mark, I think you're saying you kind of like just going in the supermarket, seeing what looks good, right? And then kind of basing what you're going to do off that in the produce aisle.
Yeah, I do. But
do you like it $500 worth?
Well, and our grocery store, not that great. So,
okay.
Like, it better would be to do this for regular things. And then we have, like, an amazing Asian market near us, and we have, like, three amazing Indian markets. So it'd be better to, like,
amazing.
Oh, yeah.
To save the produce time for that and pick up some cool eggplants.
Right. Yeah. I mean, our Indian produce selection is pretty amazing. Amazing. We're going to work on that. That's a good new word.
They have black truffles in here, too, huh?
I'm telling you, it's fun. And like Allison said, you can see the tally as you're putting things in your cart, and suddenly you're like, I don't know if I need those.
Jack, the black truffles are going to be expensive.
I'm just impressed that they have them. I'm not getting them.
Okay, why don't we take a break here? We're going to lose Allison, who has to go back to real life. And then when we come back, we're going to talk with Mark about being a gardener and working outside.
And this is a new one from Zooli called Better All the Time. Love this track. This is Sharp and Hot. We'll be right back momentarily.
Is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, joining you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, for episode number 111 with my darling husband joining me in the studio. Welcome, Mark Peterson.
Hi.
So you left the culinary world and decided to go and work outside with plants. And we were living together when you made that decision. What brought you outside, other than me saying, if you don't get a different job, I'm breaking up with you?
Well, I wasn't working in the kitchen then. I'd left the kitchen earlier.
Oh, that's right.
So I really like working with my hands, and I really like working with food and working in the kitchen, but I have much respect to anybody who works on the line, or has worked on the line, or still works on the line, because it's exhausting. And much of the time you're stood in exactly the same room, probably close within 5 feet of where you stand for about 12 hours a day, and not a lot of windows. And I don't know. I always liked being outside as a kid. My parents are gardeners. My grandparents on both sides were all gardeners. Not professionally. Nobody professionally. But everybody, that's what they did with their free time. So I just thought, I wonder if I could do that. And I just started working towards that.
And you were how old about when you made that decision? Let's see. We got married when we were 27. Yeah. So 26, 27, 28, something like that?
Probably 25, maybe.
25?
Yeah.
I say this because I asked that question because I sent out a whole pile of books to friends and listeners of the show who use the hashtag #sharpandhot on Instagram. I finally caught up with a whole bunch of mail, so everybody should have gotten their books by now. If you haven't gotten a book and you want one, use the hashtag #sharpandhot on one of your Instagram posts and I will send you a book. But one of the people that I sent it to is a woman who I'm going to keep her anonymous because I didn't clear that I was going to talk about this on the show, but she really wants to be a chef. She wants to be working in the kitchen, working with food, and she's not right now. And I didn't go to school until I was 28. You didn't go to school until you were 25. And so I feel like, to be a gardener, I should say, I feel like there's this pressure to know what we want to do right out of the gate. And in reality, I think it takes a false start or two before you realize what you really want to do. And now you do incredibly beautiful, high-end garden design for people.
Oh, thank you. as a side note, quickly, because I didn't talk about my New Year's resolution, it's going to sound but actually my New Year's resolution is to cook out of more cookbooks. And now there's a little extra competitive edge because I need to do that and tag it on Instagram, because otherwise Emily's going to send away all my cookbooks.
That's totally true. We Mark has to go through like a thing of sticky notes and flag the ones that I'm not allowed to send away. But it's a problem because we have all of these books, and then anytime I need a recipe for something, and I think this is true for most people, you go online. But I will say that when Allison was talking about wanting to get more protein, I thought, can you get broth from protein? And I went to Google and I asked
Google. Protein from broth, yeah.
What did I say? Broth from protein?
Yeah.
Protein from broth. Thank you. And it was like 10 food blogs. And it was like healthy paleo beet mama. I was like, I don't believe you. Might be right. But you know who I trust are the books that are on the shelves that have been vetted and edited and tested and all of that stuff. That like the paleo blogs are not. They may be right, but I can't trust them.
Yeah, I mean, but you do trust, like, the big names, right? Like, I do online, you know, if it's, like, Bon Appetit or Times or, you know.
Buried down in the bottom was Live Strong, and Live Strong said that you could get protein from broth.
Okay.
Not a lot, not really enough, Serious Eats, anything Food Network, anything Martha Stewart.
Yeah, you go with Food Network. Sometimes I'm kind of, like, iffy on that.
They have an army of people who are testing those recipes because they need them to be successful in order for their brand.
But are those recipes kind of dumbed down at all for a wider audience? That's my concern.
I would say that their spectrum of recipes is everything from here's how you make, you know, queso cheese dip and corn chips for the Super Bowl up to here's how you do prime rib with potatoes, Diane. I find
that they're better. The recipes from there are the more, like, the less association to a show or a personality that you find attached to them, the better they are. Yes. Like, if it just says from the test kitchen, the Food Network's test kitchens, then it's like somebody, and it has like no author at all, then it usually is a pretty good recipe.
But their whole brand success is based on people believing that they can cook as well as Tyler Florence or Ina Garten. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, if you set out to bake a chocolate cake and it comes out a total mess, then you hate the Food Network. You know, like, the home cook isn't going to say.
They want to set you up for success.
They
yeah.
are absolutely going to set you up for success. Martha, like any, and it's basically anybody who's really well capitalized. And I've seen it go the other way where my students, I let them choose recipes off the internet. I haven't tested them. They haven't tested them. And then we learn together that in order to make those fritters, somebody left out a binder, you know, so there's no egg there.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them fail kind of intentionally because that's how you learn, but they're in a learning environment. If you were at home, Jack, and your first Fresh Direct experience was you spend $50 on stuff to make falafels and some dingus on the internet who has a food blog leaves out the egg and then you just have like a pile of what looks like deep fried bird seed. Like, you're not...
this is such a likely scenario you've painted.
And then you're going to call me.
That's right, I am. I'm going to call you. Like, what happened here?
What did I do?
I've got a good one for you though. So tonight I want to make a ragu. Where would you look? Right, I have ground beef in the fridge, defrosted. I've got celery, carrots, and onions at home. So I'm like, cool, I can do a ragu, right? Yeah. But every ragu online is completely different. Some of them are like, oh, well, you got to do it with veal and pork, and this one's for sausage, and this one needs stock, and this one needs... They're all so different.
So I would make a culinary aspiration, if I was going to assign you one, to get comfortable with flexibility. So you can kind of look at the protein that you have and find a recipe that matches the protein. So if you, you said you have ground beef?
I have ground beef, yeah.
Any protein is going to be essentially interchangeable in a ragu recipe. So if it calls for veal or it calls for sausage, the fat content's going to be higher or lower. But train yourself to see in the pan, like if you use a super lean cut of ground beef and then it looks like it's burning in the pan, you throw some olive oil in. But I trust that you're a good enough cook that you have those instincts, but you don't trust yourself.
That is it. That's my aspiration, is to be like, okay, I know the basics of a ragu, so I should just make my own version of that, right?
Even for something as simple as a ragu, and I think Mark, you would say the same thing, I still look at a recipe.
Uh-huh.
And I'll probably look at two or three recipes and then be like, okay, I have this, I don't have that. And it just kind of frames your mind in a particular way. You know, like if I'm going to make Italian sauce and pasta, I'm going to look at those recipes. I could look at nothing, but I also wouldn't look at like a Vietnamese cookbook and then try to like make Italian food. Like I'm still priming my brain like any other engine. Like I'm priming it with the stuff to get me focused on what my task at hand is.
And of course, the one I want to make is the Hazan, but that's like a 4-hour ordeal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, delicious and amazing and wonderful. But Italian red sauce is actually supposed to be pretty quick.
Yeah, right?
Mark, where do you come down on this?
I'm horrible at following recipes, which is that goes to the cookbook New Year's resolution. But I will read like 4 or 5 different recipes just to get like I'll just read them like I'm skimming them, not for proportions or anything. Just like, oh, it has this, it has that. And then I'll start making based on that.
Now, I'm going to run the risk of making myself sound really dumb, but you guys are both into making your own music through a variety of different means. I could never do that. Like, I would need a recipe to follow because even though, like, I can read sheet music and I understand sound and I know what I like, I could never, like, think of 2 vinyl albums and then hit play and make them play at the same time and have that become even close to something that I would want to listen to. So, but you guys have in common that your brain works in this way where I'm like, oh, if I take a little of this and a little of that, then I can make this thing that other people want to listen to. Just apply that to the way that you think about food. Hmm. You wouldn't go cold into a DJ gig having never listened to any of that music.
Right.
So think about food kind of the same way. You're sort of listening to the recipe. I'm losing this analogy a little bit. But
it's something people do often. They try to make the music food parallel there.
But like I'm going into the kitchen having read 5 or 6 ragu recipes, and then I'm going to make my own ragu recipe or make my own ragu. You know,
has to be some kind of wine in this because literally every recipe calls for it.
Right.
So that's something I can't skip.
And wine will add flavor and also acidity. So if you didn't have wine or you didn't want to use wine, you could use apple cider vinegar or lemon juice or apple juice or some other acidifying agent. But yes. And now I've gotten way too complicated because you're like, wait, acid? What?
True enough.
We do have this huge collection of cookbooks. I would love to get rid of all of them. Mark wants to keep most of them, so
there's a lot of good books there.
There is a lot of good books. And I will say the better I become at cooking, the more I cook and follow recipes line by line, especially complicated ones. Like we have Momofuku, the David Chang Momofuku cookbook, which is, it's a beast. And weren't you and I going to make ramen? Wasn't that going to be a project?
Yeah, that was part of the New Year plan, and it's still on the table for me, out of the Ivan Ramen book.
How many days of work are we looking at?
Quite a few.
Yeah,
I feel like it's either an intensive weekend or it's kind of spread out over a week, because you're making all kinds of stocks and different, like, dashi and fat and all this stuff that you're, you know, One ingredient at a time.
The momofuku one, and by the it took me about 3 months all in.
Whoa!
No, freezing. It didn't take three.
100% took 3 months, and I will never forget that because I was pissed at it. By the time it was time to sit down and actually like eat it, I was just mad at the bowl of food. It's like, this is why you go out for ramen. People ask all the time, like, what do you go out to eat? I'm like, now my stock answer is ramen.
Well, the Made in India book from Mirasota, the guest you had on, I'm almost done with basically every vegetarian curry dish that she's got in there.
And I know we are already.
We can
over
extend
time.
A little bit.
I want to hear about your new cooking vessel because that's going to come in handy.
Oh, a tagine. Yes, I got a tagine for Christmas from Odetta. Thank you very much, Odetta. But I had a question about it. So I made a root vegetable tagine recipe from Bon Appetit, which is a wonderful recipe that I've made before having a tagine. So now I.
And like, I just want to say, for if anyone is, what's a tagine? It's like a cast iron or stone
clay
bowl, like flat bottom bowl that you put right on the fire on the top of your stove that has like a clay chimney that goes over the top.
Exactly.
Creating like a little oven environment.
And I had to soak it overnight in water and then kind of coat it in olive oil, put it in the oven for 3 hours. There's this whole seasoning thing.
Oh, wow.
Then you have to have a diffuser. You can't put it directly on the stovetop. You need a diffuser because it's really only good on low temperature.
Okay.
So all that being considered, right, this recipe, they want you to start sautéing onions. And I'm like, I can't sauté onions in this thing, really. It's like a slow, low kind of cooking vessel. So what I did was I sautéed the onions in another pot. And then, or pan rather, and then I transferred. But I was wondering, like, what your thoughts were there. If it's like maybe just slow cook the onions in the tagine instead.
It seems contrary to the whole like tagine. I'm going to cook it all in this vessel idea to do in a separate pot, and also making extra dishes.
That's how I felt. Yeah, but then again, I was like, I can't really like saute these and get them caramelizing at all in this low temperature clay pot.
I don't know. So the tagine that I have worked out is cast iron, and so it behaves like a cast iron pan, and you can get it as hot or low as you want. Is it an issue of the stone will crack if it gets too hot?
I think so, yeah.
You don't want that to happen. And it's not coated in any enamel or anything like that, right?
Not the inside, no.
That's like the...
You
the
have
OG.
Like an OG, like real...
It's a real deal, yeah. Moroccan. It was like from a company that like they actually make them in North Africa. Because to Odetta's credit, gift. She knows how I am, so she went to find like the most authentic, real version of this thing.
My guess, and I could be completely wrong here, but my guess is that in that environment of cooking, you would have a pan of sautéed onions going... and it wouldn't be that a tagine would be a specialty item. You'd be cooking in that every meal. So the Le Creuset one is intended to be washed, put away, and then taken out when you want to make tagine again. But this would probably be the main cooking vessel in a house. And so, like, you would have some bacon fat in a can in a southern kitchen, or you would have some, you know, like, I've pretty much always got a handful of, or, a, you know, a ramekin of kosher salt and ground pepper ready to go. Like, you would have, I'm guessing you might just have sautéed onions that you would take a scoop of, and it would be treated as an ingredient. But
that might be the case.
I can't be
certain.
And,
of course, the Bon Appetit recipe is not designed for a clay tagine.
Right.
So there's that too. I'm like, did they even have a tagine in mind?
And did the recipe ask you to add color to the onions or just saute them until they were translucent?
Translucent.
You could probably skip that step. Mm. If it was to saute them over high enough heat where they got crispy or a period of time where they caramelized, if it was a flavor component, if it was just enough to soften them up, you could just throw it all in and just skip that step and move ahead.
It worked out. It was a really tasty dish by the end.
Yum.
Yeah.
We made Hop and John's for the first time, which are southern black eyed peas. I used the recipe from Cochon, New Orleans, and my sister-in-law who lives in New Orleans sent us black-eyed peas that were grown in Louisiana, and I have to say, we've been living on the leftovers, and they're freaking delicious. And I would say, I was going to say, make that in your tagine. I was like, nope, ham and bacon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the other ironic thing is that like most tagine dishes are like, you know, lamb,
right?
Braises,
yeah, or chicken. chicken, right?
Yeah, I might have to just do this
one
myself.
Time.
Yeah.
No, and she's no chicken.
No, nothing.
It's a great recipe that's like chicken and the oil cured black olives and lemon juice. It's killer good.
That sounds nice.
Okay, everybody. Now we are officially really over time. I want to thank everyone who donated to the end of your fundraiser, fund drive for Heritage Radio Network. Especially you guys who tagged Sharp and Hot in your donation. I got the list of you emailed to me last night, and I got a little teary-eyed. I am so honored that you are out there and that you are listening and that you are willing to part with your hard-earned dollars in the name of good food radio and this show in particular. I am truly, truly thankful that you exist, and I hope that 2016 brings you lots of joy and hope and wonderful dishes and all of the deliciousness that the world has to offer. One of my many New Year's aspirations is to eat more foreign, strange, unique foods and eat other people's cooking more, which is kind of hard considering my whole stop spending so much money out at restaurants. But I need to fill my cup a little bit of other people's talent and inspiration.
What Emily's saying is invite her over for dinner.
That is what I am saying. Anybody who wants to extend an invitation, especially if it's a dinner in the middle of the day because of the toddler situation, I will almost definitely say yes. And like I said earlier, if you want a cookbook from mine and Mark's collection, tag a photograph of your food and cooking, hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram, and I will get in touch and send you a cookbook and make some more room in my house. Mark, thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
There was one other. Can you, in one sentence, or I'll give you 50 words or less. I feel like you're a really good dad, and you have an excellent way of getting our kid interested in food and cooking. And I was wondering if you had one piece of advice that you could leave people with to inspire their kids to cook. And if they don't have kids yet, to put it in their back pocket for when they do.
I think for anybody, you lead by example and demonstrate, you know, flexibility in color and taste and just excitement about it. And kids especially pick up on that stuff. So they just, you know, if they see you eating something and you're like, oh, this is delicious. Even if they never have that reaction of, oh, that looks weird. I don't know about green foods, or I don't know about, like, you know, that smell or whatever. And also, we fed him like Camisola Black when he was probably far too young to even be eating solid food. So
he had oyster brine on his first New Year's Eve. He was 3 months old.
Yeah, we primed him for some adventurous eating.
No, so. You've done a very, very amazing. It's amazing to watch you instill a sense of excitement and curiosity in him. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
I love you. Aw, thanks for coming on the show. Until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.